For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew, a New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, joined by my good friends, Cody Frankel and Avery Zaretsky. And we also have another special co-host guest, recurring guest, whatever you want to call him, joining the show today. He referred to this as a week-to-week PTO, and we're pumped to have Michael Delzato back on the show. Hopefully, DZ will be joining us on an every week basis. We're still trying to figure it out. Seeing if he's a first liner, fourth liner, wherever he fits in this lineup. So, DZ, welcome back to the show. Fresh off your Chicklets appearance, which was, a good watch. I didn't finish it yet, but only heard good things about it.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me back. Hopefully, we can turn this PTO into a one-year deal. Hopefully, a little bit above league minimum would be nice too. I got to put food on the table. the Chicklets one, is good. I think it's probably maybe a little bit more PG than most people would have wanted. I know there was a lot of questions about more of the off-ice stuff, but as we've talked about before, providing a little bit of insight as to the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on, in different organizations, different teams, cities, the pressures of playing in bigger markets, some of the lower quality of food and how you're treated in different markets, trying to get some of that stuff out there for the fans who may not know about it.
Where does the Blue Crew PTO rank on your PTO list?
Actually, coming out of COVID, and teams weren't signing veteran players because we had lost so much money the year before. I think we lost around $1.1 billion. So because of the rev share and the 50-50 split between players and owners, we had to make up that $550 million. It's pretty good math there. I'll pat myself on the back for that one. But we had to make that up. And I believe it was the next year, 20% of our contract went to the owners. And we didn't see a cent of that back. So you think for some guys that are making $1 million in a lot of these places where it's 50% or plus tax, 50% tax, 20% escrow, you just still got to a car, you got to find an apartment or a house to live, that salary diminishes pretty quickly. I don't think some people realize that. So it's not $1 million that it's going directly into your pocket. But back to the PTO, I didn't have anything. And I remember calling up Torts. I said, Torts, just, bring me on a PTO. I had Torts there. Rick Nash was the assistant GM in Columbus, and Basil Gray, who I grew up playing with his son, Phil, and knew for a very long time, having contacts. It says, bring me on a PTO. There's no risk for anyone. You go, if you guys don't like me, send me home. If you like me, maybe we can talk about a contract. So I got there, played very well through our short training camp, and earned myself a contract. And then from there, had a really good year. It was nice to be reunited with Torts. And then the following summer. I ended up having five multi-year deals.
DZ, you trying to tell me you're not at a country club right now?
I'm not. I'm not, unfortunately. I wish. All right. I was not living the lifestyle like you guys. Yeah. I'm hoping we can wrap this up quickly and I can get to the beach, though. You guys are killing me. I was in in New York for 2 weeks. I'm starting to lose my tan.
Freezing your ass off over here?
Yeah. I was trying to stay warm.
We got DZ, we got me, we got Avery, we got baby Jesus over there. Johnny, how you doing with that light on your face?
Yeah, I got this new camera. I don't know if you guys can tell, but I got like three ring lights on. Do I look pale? I tried to make it a little tanner over here, but
you just look.
I thought that was just your double filter. I wasn't sure what that was. I hope that's what
you're doing shiny. These days.
I honestly got a lot of shit for the last clip I posted. One of my best friends is like, dude, how much fucking shit is on your camera right now? It was like your AI. And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know how to work this thing, but. You know, trying to find some better quality, but I apologize if I'm difficult to look at right now.
No, you're still okay.
You got to perfect it for your OnlyFans career coming up in 2024.
Oh God! Outside of Johnny's feet picks, boys, who caught that game yesterday against Ottawa? Because didn't look too great.
No, I was talking to DZ about it during the game too, and you know, actually something I wanted to bring up on this show, like, you know, the Rangers have now lost six games, right? Not that many. They played 24, but. It feels like all six of those losses have been incredibly deflating. Like last night's game was, you know, when things got bad so quick, right? And I feel like that's been the case in most of those losses. But to make that into a positive too, you know, all the close games the Rangers have played in, like till the end, they've pretty much come out on top. So I think that's a good sign. But, you know, we can talk about last night's game a little bit more. Like it just got so fucking bad so quickly, especially in that second period. They come out and, you know, score a huge power play goal, but then surrender one right away to Ottawa there. So,
yeah, I mean, they're typically, you know, Laviolette is a very, very structured coach. So their structure has been, you look at their neutral zone, you know, Laviolette has been playing that for, I don't know how many years, and it's tough to beat. Last night, it just felt like there was a tons of holes through the neutral zone. They allowed these odd man rushes. They were sloppy with the puck. You know, good teams find ways to win games, even when you don't play well. And I think they've done that this year. But to your point, some of the losses that have been deflating, and last night, that's not a team you should be losing against. And I understand there's some nights that you just don't have it, you know, being on the road and the travel, numerous games in a short amount of nights. But the best teams find ways to win. And they've lost a few games, but there's going to be a lull this season. And I think everyone with their start is expecting them every single night. And there's going to be a leg. They're going to probably go through at some point a stretch of not great games where they're going to maybe lose a few, but you have to face that adversity, I think, throughout the season to set yourself up for playoffs. Because you look at Boston last year, they faced zero adversity throughout the season and they just kind of rolled through everyone. Then they get the playoffs, things get a little bit tough, and we all know how that went with the first round loss.
I actually had a question on that too. When things are going really well here, DZ, this year, like even in the locker room after the games, the guys have been, you know, clearly having fun winning hockey games, but they're still very focused. And, you know, last year, I'm not really around the Boston team a lot, but it seemed like they were very loosey goosey, kind of, you know, a little cocky with how well they were playing last year. And do you think just the way that last season ended, that chip on their shoulder against the Devils has played into the overall attitude and they don't want to get too high with how much they're winning?
I'd like to think so. Like, definitely want to enjoy the wins. You put so much work into it, you want to enjoy it, but yeah, you want to keep yourself even because then games and, you know, shit happens all the time. There's a lot of stuff that's out of your control, you know, through these different stuff throughout the league, other teams playing well, other teams struggling, and you try not to let that, you know, get into your mindset or your focus for each night. And I think they've done a good job of that. But again, it's a long season and there's going to be some adversity and they're going to go through a lull at some point here. You don't need to panic. You know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And how you come out of that is going to, you know, reveal the team's true character and hopefully help them for a big playoff push in the long run.
He knows best too. He was in the locker rooms when these type of things happen. But I will say that the Rangers, it's always going to feel deflating when the Rangers lose. That's just the way it is being a Rangers fan. Watching the team, like, no matter how they lose, they could have won 20 games in a row and their first loss would have felt as deflating as the next one does. So we're used to it at this point.
And I think for them, it's like so important. It seemed the same way after that Sabres loss. It's like kind of about how they rebound and they need to get their grip a little bit now, right? Because now you've had two blowouts essentially in the last four games, is it? Three games? I don't I lose track these days, but you know, I think they just need to kind of regroup as a team, get back to, you know, really playing tight defense and not allowing those early leads. Cause if you've noticed the last few games, I mean, every single game they're letting the other team score first and kind of losing their grip a little bit, going down 1-0, 2-0, 3-0. You know, so I think they just need to regroup a little bit. They did it against Ottawa, went down 2-0. They did it against Nashville. I think they did it against Buffalo as well, maybe. I can't remember the Buffalo game, but I think they did. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, they were down 2-0 in the third.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's three games now they've done this. And, you know, I think they just really need to regroup as a team and get back to their focus. They're obviously a very good hockey team, pretty complete. I think they just really need to regroup and you know, build on that.
Yesterday, we posted a clip, Avery, I, and Jacob Forkang, about not being concerned about Igor Shesterkin. What do you guys think of his performance last night? I think he got left out, you know, to dry a little bit, but, you know, a couple of rebounds there. And
I think, listen, he's one of the best goaltenders in the league. No one's going to argue that. For me, I watch the body language and they see the frustration. I forget, was it the Buffalo game or a few games ago, he came off, slammed his stick,
yeah,
broke it. You know, that gave me shades of Hank, you know, and I know he dealt with Hank at the end of his career and saw that. And listen, no one wants to lose. Everyone's going to be frustrated when you do lose. But I think showing that frustration isn't a positive feeling for your guys' team. Kind of, you know, it makes you feel like you're selling them out a little bit. You know, shit's going to happen. Guys aren't going to play well some nights. That's just the nature of the game. You can't play a perfect 82-game season. But the body language for me, the last couple games that at least I've watched, doesn't really sit too well with me. And I know it wouldn't for some of the players. So I'd imagine he's going to bounce back and he's going to do his thing and steal games. But again, as I mentioned before, when you go through these lulls and some of these losses and some adversity, it really reveals your teammate's true character.
Well, to that, DZ, when your goalie shows frustration, like you just mentioned, and Hank did it a lot, you know, we talked about the Hank stare last time you were on here. Does anyone have the balls in the room to give it to the goalie vocally? Because I feel like those aren't guys you typically want to, you know, hey, you got to fucking step it up and make a save for us, you know? Cause like, how many times have we seen Shesterkin bail this team out where it doesn't seem fair to do that to him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it makes it tough. I think they are a more complete team, as you guys mentioned. You don't really want to call them out, but if, you know, that type of behavior and the body language continues, I think you need to, because there still are some young guys in the team and you want everyone to pull on the same rope and in the same direction. But again, I don't see it being an issue. That's just something I've kind of noticed the last couple of games.
Yeah. And Avery and Cody, you know, last night watching the game, we can talk to DZ after about the physical aspect, but did you guys feel that they looked like they'd played three games in four nights? Because I'm sure that takes a toll on the body as well. But I didn't think it was noticeable physically, but maybe mentally it could have been a factor in the game.
Yeah, and I also think what's pretty evident in these past couple of games is like they've been traveling everywhere. I mean, they've been traveling all over the place. I'm sure that's taxing on them too. They're not really having, you know, more than that one night of rest. And, you know, they've been going from Nashville to Ottawa to, you know, back Buffalo, home. Like, yeah, back home. I mean, it's all over the place. So that can't be easy either. But at the same time, I feel like they can't be getting blown out by mediocre teams. Like you just can't.
So Ottawa's much better than their record though. Like Ottawa's a fucking good team.
Yeah. I mean, they have guys, don't get me wrong. You know,
great coaching too.
Yeah. I mean the Sharks game too, like they were playing so well against the Sharks and then kind of let up that lead towards the end and, you know, finish in a nail biter 6-5 against the worst team in hockey. Like, I think they're too good of a team for this. And again, you know, good teams find ways to beat bad teams. The score doesn't really matter. The 2 points are what matter. But I think they do need to play a little bit more competitive and find their edge back.
Yeah, I agree that, listen, the travel is not easy, but you play in the Western Conference, you've got divisional games that are 3+ hour flight, right? So in Metro, it's the best travel in the league. So as much as it is tough, it could be a lot worse. Again, three games in four nights is not easy, but when you're playing, you know, regardless of where Ottawa is in the standings, they are a decent team, but New York is still a much superior team. So you're expected to win those games, and those are games you have to win. You know, and again, you're going to lay eggs every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about them, but there are some areas of the game I think that are slipping, and they need to tighten things up a little bit. You know, there's just way too many chances off the rush. They're going to be able to score goals. Their power play is hot. That's not an issue. So if they're able to commit to that 200-foot game, you know, I have no issues with them or no concerns.
Yeah. And DZ, I actually, sorry to get off topic a little here, boys, but I have a random question for you. Okay. So you've obviously played for, you know, 6 or 7 different teams. Two of those being New York and Philly, right? Both very tough fan bases. Which fan base do you think was a little bit tougher to play in front of on the nights that you didn't play so well?
Philly for sure. Actually, you know,
yeah.
Like New York is tough. Philly, they're ruthless though. They are ruthless there.
Yeah.
We didn't have, when I played there, we didn't have great teams. So I think you just got it more frequently, where in New York you did have good teams. But maybe the expectations are high too. Philly fans are ruthless there. New York, they're both off markets. But at least on the New York side, them, you know, being able to attract the top free agents every single year, they're always spending to the cap. New York always good, right? When they went their rebuild a couple years ago, it ended up being a 1-year rebuild, and they're back in playoffs. Not many teams have that luxury, right? You know, not every player, not the top players aren't always looking to go to Philadelphia. They're looking to go to New York though. So they have that luxury where it's very rare that they're going to go through a stretch of not making playoffs. But on the other side, their expectations are so high every year too.
I got a question for all three of you guys, and I'm wondering who's going to take the first response here, but I feel like oftentimes a lot of people, you know, the common fan likes to try to relate, you know, the typical like 9-to-5 job to being a professional athlete in certain situations. And I do want to shout out, I think I saw like NYC Mike, something like blue collar, blue shirts or something. He tweeted like, you know, last night's a game where the Rangers are playing before a 3-day break. It's kind of like fucking off on a Thursday when you know you have a holiday weekend at work or whatever. Do you think there's any relation to that? I mean, I know it's obviously such a tough like comparison to make with, you know, 9-to-5s in the NHL, but I think whenever you can try to relate the two, it's always a fun conversation.
Terrible question. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
Thursdays when I had 3-day events. When I had Torts, he'd always call it like a trap game, and he'd always like hit himself in the gut. He's like, I got a feeling in my gut that you guys aren't ready to play. There are certain games, whether it's coming off a big road trip and you've played well and coming back home, like there's certain circumstances where they always call them these trap games, and yes, they are. But again, when you're, you know, the top teams don't fall into those trap games. The top teams, when you, no matter what may be going on, just because A, you've been there before with experience, or B, you're just mentally tough and able to overcome these certain circumstances, you know, that stuff doesn't exist.
What about just the scheduling in general? Like, are you looking at what you got next week, or is it really just that day by day, take it one game at a time approach? Obviously, there's some games you circle on the calendar, right? But
for sure. I mean, you're going to some of the better cities, or you're going just to see your family where you're from. There's certain games that may mean a little bit more, you're more excited for, but you can't overlook games. You know, it's a business, and you got guys, you know, not everyone has the luxury of getting games off. You go through a stretch of not playing well for 2 or 3 games because you're looking ahead to, you know, a week or two ahead, to different, to certain games or premier games, whether it's, you know, an NBC game or, you know, nationally televised game. 2-3 games off, you're out of the lineup. So not everyone has that luxury, you know, to maybe kind of turn it on and off when they please.
So DZ, is there one guy throughout your whole career, like, you just couldn't fucking stand playing against, or maybe one team that just every time you played against this person or this team, you just hated life? Well, obviously not hated life, but
I mean, Matt Cook was one of those guys. You know, he was in Pittsburgh. We played them so many times, and just like, you know, he flirted with the line of clean and dirtiness, and I didn't really love that. I wouldn't say there's really many other guys that I couldn't stand.
What about besides Matt Cook? What about one guy you wish you could have fought, but never got the chance to?
Oof.
I asked the hard hitters.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I fought my career, blue. It's 140, whatever it was. I dropped my gloves 4 or 5 times, more early in my career, especially in New York, just because, you know, playing with different partners. And if I got, you know, I was kind of, you know, the offensive guy, and if I got hit in, you know, in a dirty way or whatnot, someone would come up and stick up for me. So if that happened to my partner as well, I wanted to reciprocate to let him know, hey, you got my back, I got yours. But every time it got broken up with the ref. So I was definitely thankful about that. And there's kind of an unwritten rule, you know, the linesmen definitely know which guys are more experienced in that department and let guys kind of figure it out and go down or stop. You know, when they are done, you see some guys that, you know, have a mutual agreement, which I think is, you know, such an art and so classy about what they're doing, because they understand it is a part of the game and they're not just trying to hurt each other. So the linesmen understand that, and understand that, you know, I'm a very inexperienced fighter, and they understood what I was trying to do and the meant I was trying to get across to partner teammates, and they respected it and let it go for a bit, and then they would break up. So hopefully no one hurt.
Well, DZ, I want to ask you about your last couple weeks, because you returned to MSG, went to a couple Ranger games, the game against Boston, the game against Buffalo. You were on the road to Nashville this past weekend, but was that your first time attending like an NHL game, you know, post-career as a fan?
Yeah. First time really, you know, watching a game, you know, start to finish. To be honest, I haven't missed hockey one bit once I retired. So I knew that was, I made the right decision. You know, I expected kind of around that September training camp or October start of season mark, I would start to miss it a little bit, and I haven't missed it at all. So it was, you know, definitely great for me to know that I made the right decision and there was no regret and looking back. But as soon as I stepped foot in MSG, I was like, fuck, I miss it. I miss it again. Yeah. And it's, you know, that place is just so special. That game, you know, for my favorite against Boston, crowd was buzzing. That was, it was, to be honest, it was the first little bit was tough to be there. You know, I got goosebumps. I missed it. I was almost getting like a little emotional to myself. New York was such a place, such a special place for me. You know, I was so young when I started there, I was a sponge and kind of soaked it all up. And going back there just brought back so many memories. And I got to see, you know, numerous people who are still within the organization that I haven't seen in so long, and catching up with them and reliving the memories and moments from when I was there was special. It was very special.
Anyone recognize you, ask you for pictures in the concourse? Or you
a good amount of people, which was good. And I did get a lot of supportive messages from fans, and, you know, unfortunately you do read some of the shit online. You have some people that are just haters and love to, what do they call them, keyboard warriors or whatever, that, you know, whatever, all that nonsense. But going back, there's some very positive messages, and some of the younger kids grew up watching me play, that are playing, and that I was motivation, and that's the stuff that you know, I miss, is being able to inspire younger kids to chase their dreams, whatever it may be, if it's hockey or something else. And then on the Monday game with Buffalo in town, you know, Boiler was in town and he was my roommate when I was 19. So we haven't really, now he's married with five kids. So we haven't really had a ton of time to catch up and spend with each other. So being able to get an hour or two, you know, just catching up and see how each other were at, about our families and whatnot, was very enjoyable too.
You get to rip the town at all while you're here?
I did, and I was in town for Thanksgiving to see my parents, my brother still lives in the city, and my nephews. So, unfortunately, a lot of early nights. Those days are over. I'm retired from that as well. Yeah.
So when's your next trip planned to New York? I know you're going to the Ranger game, I think, when they're down in Florida, right?
My parents are here for Christmas, so we'll see. TBD on that one. As of now, I mean, you guys, I guess, will be the first to know. I'm planning on coming back for the end of January for the Islanders Rangers alumni game.
Oh, wow.
So I got to get the skates. Awesome. Yeah, make sure I got my skates sharpened and work on that a little bit beforehand, so I'm not, you know, throwing pizzas everywhere. I'll be around for that. I'll probably be around hopefully a couple of days before. I know Vegas is in town, and one of my best childhood friends, Alex Pietrangelo, will be there. So it'll be fun to watch him play and catch up with him. So that's the plan as of now. I'd love to be back, you know, probably every 4 to 6 weeks. That's kind of the plan. Just trying to figure out the dates and whatnot, get involved on some of the alumni stuff, back in the community with Garden of Dreams, and show face again and be able to give back my time, and because I am so appreciative of my time there and everything that the organization did for me.
All right, let's get to some fan questions. We'll start right here, and actually nope, because it's about what we just talked about, from James Fitz 19. This one's for DZ. from your time on the Rangers, what was the best quote Tord said to you or your teammates?
Safe is death. Yeah, he hated when guys were standoffish or I want to say intimidated, but yeah, I guess intimidated would be like he wanted guys to be assertive, wanted the guys to be, you know, issue, wanted guys in the physical contact. So it's safe is death, and that's one that and then place is death. What I've kind of translated that to into life, but he said too many fucking quotes, but that one for me stuck with me. It was that, and then he always talked about me like getting my swagger back. Like if I was playing well, I had my swagger. If I wasn't playing well, he always like have that swagger, like a little bit of, you know, you almost flirt between that line of confident and cocky. And that's what he knew, that's what made me the player I was, especially earlier on when I was an offensive guy and making plays. Like I had that a little bit of arrogance to me. So he always told me to get my swagger back. But as far as the team, it was, you know, safe as death. Yeah.
What'd you make of his no hit league comment last week?
Well, that and then the other one, yeah, that was great. I mean, absolutely right. Yeah, I watched it numerous times with Luke Hughes, and it's just unfortunate. The game now, we're preaching speed, skill. Guys are skating through the neutral zone and skating back for with their hand, not sure checking. The onus should be on the player to put themselves in positions to take a hit, because it is a contact sport. So now guys are getting suspended, losing money. You know, crucial penalties at the wrong time that you're now losing games over clean hits, in my opinion. Yeah, there are some that are dirty, but with how fast the game is, if guys move a split, an inch or a split second, a shoulder-to-shoulder hit now becomes a shoulder-to-head, and you never want to see injuries. I get that. We want to eliminate that. But there has to be some type of middle ground, because the physical play is a big part of the game. So there, you know, unfortunately, there's no accountability on the player who's taking the hit now anymore. It's always the person giving the hit. I don't agree with that. So I'm on the same page with Torts. And then he had the other epic one about his team saying, oh, we make mistakes, we don't make enough plays. Then, but fuck, our team has balls. And he's true. If you watch him play, his team, he's notorious for that. He's got that group playing well, believing in each other and playing with balls. Like they're not an intimidated team. Like they go out and, If they're going to lose, they're going down swinging. They're not going down looking. And that's one thing I've loved about it. I love watching their team play, is that they fucking work. Like they want to win. And I respect that so much.
All right, our next one is from Brandman 7694. And Cody, we'll start with you. Who is your first autograph you got? Mine was Adam Graves.
I've actually got Gravesy's autograph a couple times. You know, it was my first autograph I ever got. It was Jay Leach.
Really?
Yeah.
No way. Where?
Yeah, at the Garden during the playoffs when they used to do the Rangers Town things. Oh my gosh, it must have been like, I don't know, like 12 years ago now. He popped by and saw his bald head and was like, "Hey, can I get an autograph?" And he signed it. And then actually, funny enough, right after that, I got Matos. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, I accidentally met Graves like on the street. And just started talking to him, and then literally realized it was Adam Graves. But I didn't ask for his autograph; just shot the shit with him.
How about you, DZ? Who's your first autograph?
Well, just to very quickly, one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. He is one of probably top two nicest human. Adam Graves, top two.
He's unbelievable. Human being, he's unbelievable.
I've ever met in my life. Just like a genuine human being.
Great guy.
Autographs. I have a lot of them. I don't remember my first one. I know my first autograph stick was Matt Sundin, just growing up a Leafs fan.
Yeah.
I have a pretty epic collection of signed sticks, actually. You know, from, I mean, I don't know how many Hall of Famers I have. It's got to be probably 20 guys just throughout my career. Mm-hmm. You know, we go from Crosby, Ovechkin, Stamkos, McKinnon, or you go down to Kucherov, Brady Point. You go to Vasilevsky, Hank, Sedins, on and on. So I have that. It's actually in my parents' basement, and I don't really know what I'm going to do with it. I don't know eventually if I'll bring it to my place and kind of have it as a collection, or maybe pass it down if I have kids one day. But it's a pretty epic one.
I think that's so cool when professional athletes like ask other athletes for autographs. Like I think that's just one of the funnier things that I feel like people don't really know about as much, right?
Yeah. Well, listen, there's guys I'm buddies with, I've played with, played against, or played with growing up. And there's some guys that you just admire their game. They're such special players, and you know, they're fun to watch even when you're on the ice. Like, fuck, like, what a play, you know? Think of Connor McDavid every night. Like, it's hard not to be a fan to watch that guy play. So to be able to, you know, get a signed stick and then, you know, tell your kids about it or grandkids about it one day, because at that point, who knows what social media or, you know, game tape will be like watching these guys. You know, I grew up, you know, watching Rock'em, Don Cherry's Rock'em Sock'em, and you more sort of see like some nice goals, but you see a ton of big hits and fights, and you get to know some of the players that way. So now being able to actually have sticks and show it to, again, my kids or grandkids, and this is what, you know, so-and-so use, this is what so-and-so use, and who knows where technology is going to be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of what the sticks are going to look like or be able to do.
Mm-hmm. One of the first autographs I got, I didn't personally get it, but I had it framed in my bedroom growing up. My mom followed Rick DiPietro into a Rothman Steakhouse bathroom and had him sign a napkin for me. And I wasn't even a DiPietro fan, and I had that framed in my bedroom for some reason. But
that's commitment.
Yeah, that's how dedicated my mom was, for sure. Let's go into the next one. And I've actually, I might be able to answer this too. Cody, you probably can also, I would imagine. Mark Schiraldi, from what part of Italy are you from, and what's your favorite Italian dish? Forza Italia. I don't know how to fucking say that, but did I say that right?
Forza. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you said it fine. My dad's side is up north in Friuli. My mom is in the south in Calabria. That's what where the dark features I have come from, which is nice. Favorite Italian dish. You know, I was very fortunate growing up, my parents, myself, my brother, and then we actually had my dad's parents live with us as well. So my one set of grandparents, and then directly next door was my aunt and uncle with my other set of grandparents. So there's no shortage of, you know, besides fully Italian, amazing cooks. That's why I was a little bit of a chubby kid, for sure. A lot more carbs than I'm having now. But I wouldn't say there's like one dish that they were amazing at. We had a huge garden in our backyard. Both my nonnos, both my grandpas, made wine, salami, soppressata, prosciutto. You go down the list and we kind of had everything, vinegar. For my mom's favorite dish, or my favorite dish from my mom, is, she makes like a very like thick crust pizza. It's crispy, and it's she does prosciutto and goat cheese on the top, which I love, and I don't eat it often. So anytime we do get together, that's usually like the first thing I request.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big chicken vodka parm.
I knew you'd say that. You're so fucking lame. Oh my
God. Yeah, exactly. So typical. Yeah.
I don't have the grandparents or the parents. I just like to go to the restaurant and get chicken vodka parm.
There's so many Italian restaurants though.
Yeah.
Emilio's on Houston, which is fantastic. And they just do the massive veal chop, which is one of my favorites as well. That was delicious there.
I've never been, but maybe you guys can confirm. I've heard the best chicken parm or whatever in the city is quality Italian. They have like the chicken parm, like pizza pie thing.
They call it the pizza. Yeah, it's literally the size of a pizza. It's enormous. It's good. Yeah, it's good. You have to run to the bathroom after though. Like it's a big serving and a lot of cheese. Like it's very tasty, but goes through. Yeah, it's a good one.
All right, Cody, I'm going to ask you this, and then I'll flip it to DZ. What's the craziest picture that you have with an athlete? This is from Mike Keezy.
The craziest picture.
He said craziest picture or autograph, but we already did autographs, so I'm just going to stick a picture.
You know, my dad has this, and I don't know if he can find this, but back in 2009, when the Yankees won the World Series.
Who the fuck says 2009? 2009?
2009, bro. Back in 2009, the Yankees won the World Series, and fuck you, Johnny. And I remember I went to the Canyon of Heroes. Do you know what the Canyon of Heroes, Johnny, is? Yeah. You might have never seen it in your life.
Well, I've never been, because I've never seen a team win the championship, but I've no idea.
Yeah, you're a curse. But anyways, so the Yankees won the World Series, and I remember they were on the float, and I don't know if you've ever watched these on TV when like any team wins, but they like chuck beers at the fans to whatever. So I went with my dad, and he was taking photos, and somebody, I think it was El Duque, which is Orlando Hernandez. You probably don't know who that is since, nope, you know, you don't know sports, but just kidding. He chucked a beer and I remember I was like, I think I was in high school. I must've been a freshman or sophomore. And I was reaching for the beer and like, it was to some grown man, like behind me. And my dad like got the picture of like him, like handing the beer and me trying to reach for it when I was like 14 or something. So I guess that would be it. Yeah.
No, that's cool. DZ, I'm sure you have one with the cup, obviously.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the best ones though. There's one, there's two that come to mind. One is when we won the cup, we were in Vegas. There was, I think it was like three or four of us were at What Republic pool party. It's four of us with all of the waitresses that were there in the picture with the cup between us. And if you've been to Vegas, you know that girls are, you know, very good looking. So that's a really good one. I was actually thinking where I pull it quickly on my phone. And then the other one was one time in the Hamptons earlier in my career, I was with a couple other guys and we're in one of the guys' backyards. And there was like four of us tanning naked after the season, just by the pool. And I might have to delete that one, you know, with all this cybersecurity these days, I can't have someone get access to that one. Yeah.
Those are Avery just hopped off. Three of them got hacked.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like three other teammates and I tanning naked in the backyard, having a couple of drinks after a long season.
That's unreal. I love that. Yeah. You can't let that one get leaked. That would probably,
no, do some damage. No, they wouldn't be happy with me.
I'm going to say mine is this one from the previous cup final. I went out with the empty netter guys, Grinnelli, and we were with Eichel at a bar till like 6 a.m. And I did the selfie after with the timestamp 5:40 a.m. Eichel looks banged up.
Yeah.
That's a great awesome one.
That's probably my favorite one for sure. Since I'll never win a Stanley Cup, it was cool to party with it for a bit.
Yeah,
but
that's a sick picture.
That's going to do it for fan questions this week. I think that's all we got for this week. So Rangers play Saturday, Sunday. They debut those third jerseys on Sunday, which actually you can ask you, DZ. What do you think of that third jersey?
Not my favorite. Yeah. Just the logo just seems too big. It's just like it's very – and the stripes, I don't love the colors. The ones we had when I played for the Winter Classic, those were fucking pure. Like those
– the cream
those
one?
Really nice. Yeah. We had the cream one. And we also at that time just the one that said New York across – the old Navy ones, those were beautiful. These are like they're fine, just like the logo is too big. It's a little overpowering in my opinion.
Yeah, you guys, I agree. I wasn't a huge fan of them either. Yeah. We talked about it on the last episode. Like, you know, it's funny. Pete Blackburn said it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he said the Rangers crest is like so beautiful, but it just doesn't look right on a jersey.
Do you guys think they're going to drop new jerseys for the Stadium Series, or you think they're just going to go with those alternates?
I think they will.
I'd imagine so. I always wonder, like, who creates that? Do they go to the team, say the trainers? I know the players have zero involvement in that. I always wonder if it would not be beneficial to have the guys be a part of it or someone within the organization that has a little bit of say of what the guys may like, because at the end of the day, they are the ones to wear. And I understand there's a marketing side and all that, but you'd want guys to want to wear these jerseys too.
Yeah, and my last question is also on that topic, DZ. How was it playing in an outdoor game? Like, what would you say the environment's like?
It was awesome. It's not just the game; it's the whole of meeting. My family was in town. We had the family seat the day before, so you're doing family dinner. And as you know, we mentioned last time, the Rangers just do everything first class. Like, you know, every detail that you can think of, they've already thought of time and time again and perfected it. So making the families feel welcome, included, comfortable, it was fucking awesome. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
One of my favorite memories of my career.
I got my tickets already for February. I'm stoked.
You're going to be there?
My buddy's getting married that weekend. What a prick. So I went forward to it.
Selfish scumbag.
I saved you a ticket. That's a little,
I just found out yesterday and I'm seeing the wedding too. So that's a tough one to get out of.
That's cool.
So he'll be eating it extra hard for making me miss the game. I'll be throwing a few more daggers than usual.
DZ's going to be that guy during the ceremony. He's going to like have it up on his phone. His phone's going to drop. He's going to get yelled at.
No, not at all. I don't go too many. I know at Sagan's this summer, I see a speech where I'm wearing my shirt off dancing on the table. So I like that fun at the wedding. I like to let loose a little bit. Yeah. Yeah,
that's definitely a I'd love to go to a NHL wedding at some point in my life. Hopefully I get invited to one. I don't know who it would be, but that's definitely a bucket list thing for me because those look fucking amazing.
If I ever do, you're invited. Just a matter of picking that up.
All right. Yeah. I was trying to hint at that.
It could be a long wait. Who knows?
All right. Well, thanks, EZ. We appreciate you hopping on again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Cody, do your thing.
I love GR, baby.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.